Accession number 10420, rule 41.
Yes, and I think we're in the middle of the lovely Jebel country, which is superbly beautiful in the spring. Now, we had a certain amount of tire trouble, so I stopped at an RASC recovery section. Now, the officer commanding the section had his office in an old police post, and he lived in the lap of luxury and comfort. He had, when I went in, a roaring wood fire burning in the fireplace, and he had some very heavy boots drying, and he had four 12-bore shotguns, and a pair of them were in a case which had C.B. Frye Sound Sister, on the case. And he was obviously a man who loved the countryside. And he had a shoot, of course, he could shoot. And he described all the variety of partridges that he had on his beat. And anyhow, I got the tire put right, and we then set off towards Barche, and on a long, very rough road, and by 4:30, we spent the night, Weber and I, in a deserted Italian farm. I think it was down on the plain there, if I remember rightly. Not far from the coast, and Weber slept in a room with a roaring fire, and I think I probably did the same. And anyhow, for a change, we slept in. It was so comfortable to be sleeping in a farmhouse, and not in a tent. But the whole beauty of the journey really was spoilt by these awful wrecks of vehicles that one saw all the way along the road the whole way. And anyhow, on the 11th of January, we reached Benghazi, and I went to area headquarters to find out where the division was, and I was told that they were at Benina, some 15 miles east of Benghazi. And by 1:30, I arrived, and so ended what was, in fact, quite an interesting journey. I reported back to the brigade. Now, all my chaps told me that they'd had a full journey, cutting across the desert below the Jebel area, and the rain bogged them down completely. Now, the campsite was about 1/2 mile away from a RAF landing ground, I think about 1/2 mile, and it was at the base of, you might say, the west end of the Jebel. And you had this big escarpment which went up into the Jebel area itself. The wildflowers, as I've said before, were quite out of this world. Things that are beautiful here in England. But my goodness me, all around us at Benina, they were really wonderful. And the grass was long, and I remember one of the things I remember was that the whole area was covered in mushrooms. I lived on mushrooms for evening meals and breakfast. You just went out and you could pick a basket of mushrooms. Why they should be there, I really don't know. There were wildlife galore. I remember on one occasion I put up two, maybe three foxes of a greyish colour. And one morning I went out for a walk before breakfast. I came face to face with a wolf, and there were always jackals about around the camp. But it was a very interesting place to be. The camp itself was on a low ridge, as I say, at the bottom of the escarpment, at the west end of the Jebel. The ground was rocky in places and muddy, but deliciously green with the flowers. And we were half a mile from this RAF landing ground. Now, almost on the next day, I think it was, I had to go to headquarters of Corps headquarters. Of course, there was a conference for all COs, and we were now in 10 Corps. And we were given a talk by General Horrocks, and he gave us details for the forthcoming offensive to capture Tripoli. The reason for 10 Corps not being forward was on a ground of entirely a question of supply. And he compared it to London and Moscow with only one road. And the storm had stopped the move. And as I say, I think it was the night of the flooding to which I've already referred. There had to be forward dumps necessary to keep the 8th Army going forward. Benghazi had been unloading about 30,000 tons per day of stores and supplies. And then after the storm, when the mole was breached, dropped to nil and in a night, and all further move of 10 Corps was completely stopped. Now, all our transport, was other than just the immediate vehicles we needed for training purposes, but all our transport was taken away and withdrawn with the drivers, and these convoys had to replace the ships to bring stores all the way from Tobruk and by road, and they were hoping to take about 300 tons a day of stores up to the 8th Army, which was round Tripoli. And they hoped, so Horrocks said, that this amount would be increased to 600 tons a day. The situation, he explained, was extremely serious. And I think all the history books make that quite clear, that this was so serious that operations might almost have to be stopped. Anyhow, what Horrocks told us was there would be a core MT competition, and all the vehicles would be checked as to their maintenance and the running and the timetable for bringing these stores from Tobruk. And a prize would be given, priority leave and £20 for the unit that eventually won it. And they would be able to put painted on the doors of their cabs a laurel wreath. And the eventual winners were a battalion of the Green Hearts. But I think out of the whole corps, I think the 151 Brigade was third. And this competition went on the whole time while we were at Benghazi. And then 2 days later, we were told to tell the all ranks of the situation. And of course, it succeeded, and Tripoli fell, as Monty said it would. Now, on the 16th, according to my notes, of January, we were visited by a parliamentary delegation, and Lord Aylwin visited the 6th Battalion. Jack Lawson, later Lord Lawson of Beamish, visited the 8th Battalion. Lord Teviot visited the 74th Field Regiment, and Scrimgeour Wedderburn visited the 9th DLI. And my chaps were deeply impressed that a peer of the realm should bother to come all the way up here to Benghazi just to talk to them. It's queer, you know. Jack Lawson at the 8th Battalion, their MP, in fact, really didn't create the impression that my chap did. He had lunch with us in the officers' mess. I think he rather thought the two chaps in a little bivvy tent was a bit of a squash. But he went round talking to everybody. I think the chaps thought in the 8th Battalion, our Jack. Well, it wasn't quite the same as having a peer of the realm bothering to come out to Benghazi to see how they were getting on. And the other nice thing about him, so far as I was concerned, was he took my name and address and said he'd write to my mother, and duly did, to say how he'd found me and that I was fit and well. Monty wouldn't allow them to go any further westwards, and so they came to us and spent the day looking at our welfare. There's Lord Aylwin. He was an extraordinarily nice man, I thought. And then Tripoli fell on the 22nd, I think I'm right, of January. And I remember my chaps were awfully bitter that they weren't in at the kill. The Highland Division was there. There'd been friendly animosity in the past. Now there was almost fighting. I think they'd have almost fought the Highland Division instead of the Germans had they been able to get at their throat. And I tell you who came to join us then was General Leclerc, who's the famous French general, and he'd brought his spies all the way from Chad, right across the Sahara, and they asked if they could wear the 50th Divisional badge. I saw them once or twice training with us, and they were duly allowed to wear the badge of the 50th Division on their sleeves. I know when Tripoli fell, I said to one of my chaps, aren't you surprised? Are you glad that Tripoli fell? Has now fallen, and he said, well, Monty said it would, and what more? And that was the sort of faith they had at that time in Monty. You may ask what sort of training we did while we were at Benghazi. Well, now, Kaur started a street fighting course for 2 days in Benghazi, in the ruins, because the whole town was practically in ruins. And I thought it was too short. If it had been 4 days, it would have been much, much better. But it was only 2 days. And I think I'm right in saying my number 10 platoon actually won it over on the assault course. There was an assault course over the ruins and the walls and Benghazi. And I think I'm right in saying number 10 platoon actually won it. That was one thing we did. We practiced man handling 6-pounder anti-tank guns. We'd been issued with 6-pounder by now, or a certain number of them, across a very difficult wadi. We also practiced crossing and clearing a minefield, and the sappers helped us by laying dummy mines with bangs, so that you knew if you set one off, you'd have had it. And then we also did in the Jebel minor mountain warfare. You could do it quite well up there, the deep valleys and the escarpments into the Jebel area. We did that. And we did it against an active enemy. We did company and battalion exercises, and we also trained the RAF personnel at the aerodrome in elementary recruit training. And I had a chap called Atherton, who was not in the DLI, but he'd come to me. He was very good, and I had two sergeants, and we trained 200 airmen in just the elementary up to recruit standard training, and in the use of ground and the use of the rifle and grenades. And after we'd done 200 airmen, we took on training the sergeants and officers. And I said to one airman, how are you getting on? And his reply was that I never knew there was so much in the army. And the RAF were really most appreciative. And we did this, practically throughout that our stay at Benghazi. I remember the going over to the aerodrome one day, or the landing ground, which was also occupied by some USA airmen, and they got a new airplane. I can't remember now what it was. And I went over with my adjutant to have a look at it, and there were the Air Force, USA Air Force personnel, I think playing cards or something like that, sitting on the edge of their drum, and I said, could we go and have a look? And they said, sure, there it is, go and have a look. You know, my adjutant and I could have put a bomb inside it and blown it sky high. The security was completely unthought of. That was just one incident apart from our training the British RAF. Now, another rather interesting incident was around about the 18th of February. A staff sergeant of the Army Catering Corps was attached to the battalion, and he came and asked me if he could cook us a meal, basically out of ordinary rations, in our officer's mess. So I asked Andrew Clark of the 9th Battalion, and I also asked Brigadier May. Well, he was only Major May then. He was hard at work trying to get chaps out of my battalion, out of the brigade, for a parachute regiment. And so I asked him, and I asked also Collett White, who couldn't come. And this was the meal that the Army Catering Corps Staff Sergeant gave us. And as it went on, Andrew Clark's face expressed amazement more and more and more as the meal progressed. And after it was all over the next day, I found one of his one of his soldiers behind the officer's mess, and I asked him what he wanted. And he said, "Oh, Colonel Clark sent me, sir, to see how you did the meal last night." And obviously Andrew was wanting something much the same. Anyhow, here is the menu, but I wrote it down at the time. We started with hors d'oeuvre and beans, sardine, a slice of sausage, onion, walnut, and carrot. I think perhaps the walnuts and the onions may have been got from the naffy, but primarily it was just ordinary rations. Then we had soup. Then we had fish, a large sardine in breadcrumbs and anchovy sauce. And then we had an entree, hashed bully beef, fried in breadcrumbs and a sauce. And then we had mutton and vegetables cooked perfectly and piping hot. Then we had a sweet, and then we had a savory, which was cheese wrapped in a slice of bacon. And we finished the whole meal off with a glass of Kimmel that I'd brought from Cairo in my 1,500-weight truck with the 500 eggs. It really was a quite splendid meal. But at the same time, that same day, we received a warning order that we would have to move, start our move. The brigadier had very wisely said that there would be, from time to time when he ordered them, I think there were three rest days, and the training had been pretty stiff and pretty hard, and no officer had to go near the other ranks. They could just do what they liked. We did, in fact, have some games to keep them occupied, cross-country runs and basketball and that sort of thing on the desert. But anyhow, on the first rest day, I know the divisional commander, Crashaw Nichols, had a conference. And he said we were bound for Tunisia to join 30 Corps we should reach our destination about the 12th to the 17th of March. And the 30 Corps would comprise the 50th Division, the 51st Division, and the New Zealand Division, and the 7th Armoured Division. In fact, a real bunch of veterans, you might say. And that our probable role was to attack the Maroth Line. And that the enemy would possibly use new tactics, and that we were to study Tunisia, and our turnout would have to be absolutely perfect, and our vehicles would have to be painted and tidied up. And we were to practice going through minefields with scorpions. Scorpions were tanks with flails in front of them, and as they moved forward, the flails went round, chains really, setting off the mines. Now, it so happened that we got a squadron of scorpions to help the whole brigade, and they were commanded by a chap called Drury, and shows what a small world he was. He was the son of old Bob Drury, who was the vicar of parson of St. Cuthbert's, Darlington. And I used to see old Bob Drury, this chap's father, out hunting. He was a great hunting man. And when I used to hunt, old Bob Drury used to come out too. And here was his son with a squadron of scorpions to help us go clear our way through the minefield. And I know that on one occasion we had a competition also in part of our training to climb the escarpment behind us in the Jebel area. And the GOC was there, and also the Corps commander, as my battalion scrambled up the escarpment. And it was getting warmer now, and I was wearing battle dress and shorts. And I think it was, in fact, a very cold day, but the day before had been beautifully warm, and the day after was. And I think the Corps commander thought I was slightly batty wearing shorts, climbing the escarpment behind the camp. Anyhow, he told me and told the brigade that we had been, the 151 Brigade, had been third in the transport competition out of 16 entries, and the 50th Division had taken the first five places. I always remember that. Anyhow, on the 2nd of March, we'd by then packed up, and we started the move. And we did the first 3 miles to Agadabia, and we left all the beautiful flowers behind, and we once more, the sand dunes returned, and they had been blowing in from the Sahara, you might say, and it almost reached the coast. But it was there that Derek Tomlinson and I, that day, picked 35 species of flowers, and we had them on the mess table for our evening meal. And it was there, too, that I realized that he and I weren't the only ones who loved flowers. I found quite a lot of my other officers had been picking them and pressing them to send them home. So you can see how deeply impressed we were by the beauty of the countryside.